I'm not scared of clowns. I know a lot of people are.
That was such a flex.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Alright, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Boom shakalaka.
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Oh, it's spooky.
That's my spooky scary sound effect. Did you ever have the CDs with the spooky sounds that you would
Records.
Yeah, records. Nice. How old are we?
There was an old 1960s Disney one that we had, and there was a more modern, quote unquote, at the time, 80s one from Disney that we had.
Modern spooky sounds.
Yeah, that's right. It probably even said something to the effect of modern spooky sounds you can play in the dark.
Jamming on the one.
Yeah. That one from the 60s, no surprise, was the scarier one.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I bet. No, we didn't have very many scary sounds. We did a lot of Christmas music at Christmas time, but around Halloween, I think we went trick-or-treating, and then we had to go to the hospital to get our candy x-rayed. Remember that?
Do they still do that? They still do, even though it's a complete and total myth.
Yeah, it's like a fabrication.
I can't tell if you're joking.
No, dude, this is one of those weird places where the 4-year age difference between us is probably showing up, because this was when I was probably about 7, maybe 8.
Man, this went on for a long time. I'm surprised Barrett didn't know about this.
All right, then. Maybe it was, and that's, it can't be regional then, right? Well, wait, where did you grow up, Barrett? Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I was around here. Yeah.
That's Nashville, what I thought. So they were afraid people were putting needles and razor blades and candy and shit.
I know that,
so,
but did you seriously go get an x-ray?
Absolutely, yes. We stood in line. The hospital opened up their x-ray thing for free, and we would shuffle in, and they would x-ray our candy and show you the x-ray and show you that there's no pins with diseases on them in your Tootsie Rolls. And
wow.
Then go home and
Everybody's heard about the razor blades and apples and shit like that, but I'd never heard of the actual x-ray thing.
And bless these people's hearts for not not telling the parents this is stupid.
My mom worked at that hospital, and she still took us in to do it. I don't think she thought it was stupid, but yeah, the x-ray people probably did.
Wow. Oh my God. It's like, can you imagine, like, you x-rayed, like, how many X amount of pounds of candy in one night or whatever, and didn't find any goddamn razor blades whatsoever, and...
You know, meanwhile, the dude with the broken leg is like sitting in the waiting room waiting.
Yeah,
for shit.
Yeah, exactly. you would think that you know the findings from the X-ray from the previous night would make the news, right? Like, absolutely no razor blades were found. You know, I mean, just think about how difficult that would be to implement. You know, like, you're just pulling out, like, a Hubba Bubba or something and fucking throwing, you know, a razor blade in there and then making it look like it's not has a razor blade in it.
Yeah. Really wrap that shit up and, like, glue the sides and everything.
Yeah.
Hubba Bubba.
But no, I don't think I ever had my candy x-rayed because I was eating it that night.
Your mouth all full of blood.
Yeah, exactly. Mine was filled with razor blades, but it didn't matter.
You actually requested the razor
blades. That's right. I asked for extra razor blades. In mine.
This is along the lines of, did you guys also have the same time there was this whole urban legend that most of my friends believe that if a car coming towards you flashed their lights at you, it might be a gang,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
they're doing an initiation killing. If you flash them back, that's how they decide to kill you. I don't think there's ever been any proven evidence of that, but that was everywhere I lived. People were afraid of that.
There was a number of those. I can't remember what year that was. There was something. I think there was a. What was that? There was not only the flashy thing, but there was some other initiation thing, myth that was going around that time. And how long ago was that? I think I was in New York when I was hearing about all these different, like, just random, like, they're looking for somebody random to, you know, and I can't remember what the whole process was, but it was a huge scare for a long time that, you know, if you did this, then this gang would do this. And it's like, and the police departments were like, I don't know what you're talking about. But. Okay. So, we have a show today, I think.
Yeah, we do.
What?
We are going to be talking about, you know, cause it's Halloween. And we're going to be talking about scary movies.
We're going to be talking about scary movies.
That's right.
And we thought that we would go over our favorites, the modern favorites, the classic favorites, the franchises that that wow us in the horror genre. We also wanted to take a look at some of the horror movies of the last 10 years, too, as well. So like some of our favorites from the last 10 years, because horror has sort of been redefined. Modern horror is one of those, you know, when we used to have the modern horror guys on, it was always, they were always talking about horror movies that didn't fit the classic mold of horror. They had horror elements in it, but a lot of times these were like funny, or they were, you know, they had some sort of social commentary, you know, it's the modern horror is quite different, but, we figured we'd talk about some of our favorites in all these different eras and everything. And who wants to kick us off?
I'll go first because, Barrett, are we talking modern first?
Sure.
All right. So modern then has nothing to do with Barrett. But I chose two modern horrors that I like. One I've already raved about here on this very pod, and that's Spontaneous.
Yeah.
Which is... Almost the definition of what you just said in terms of modern horror. It has elements of horror, but it has elements of romance. It has elements of comedy. It has science fiction elements. It even dabbles in like addiction and,
I'm wondering what IMDb actually categorizes that film as. It's gotta be horror. Man.
It's probably got three genres on it.
Yeah. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
But horror, comedy.
That movie hits you from every different angle that you can think of. Not since Locke, I think, has a movie that Jeremy has recommended, like, delighted Chris and I much.
Well, it helps that Catherine Langford is so fucking charming. And you need somebody that charming in this role to really pull the viewer in, because it is a weird ride. I think if you had a stilted performance there, somebody who didn't really go for it, it might not all click together the way it does. And the other
comedy,
one,
comedy horror, and sorry to interrupt you, but comedy, horror, and romance are the genres.
That's fair. Yeah, it's good. It's good. Yeah. My other modern one that I really enjoy, that I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed it, is The Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss.
Yes.
Elizabeth Moss.
There's so many Elizabeths. Mm-hmm. I'm always afraid I'm going to get... There's a lot of Elizabeths, and there's a lot of Emmas.
Yeah, there are.
I'm always afraid I'm going to get them wrong.
There's a lot of Meryls.
Meryls. That movie... is terrifying at times, and sometimes the terrifyingness has more to do with the relationship she's trying to escape than it does the actual horror scares and thrills. There's a psychological element to this film that really pairs well with themes of invisibility, I just feel like it has so many different layers. You can just watch it on the surface level, and it's a taut thriller that will scare you several times. But if you want to dive into the deeper elements and themes of what's going on, it all holds up super well. And you can just check out that psychoanalysis pod, that psycho A pod that I guested on several months ago, listen to them talk about a movie like this.
You didn't do The Invisible Man. You did Ex Machina, right?
Yeah, we did Ex Machina.
But they did, that podcast did Invisible
Man. They did Invisible Man. I'm probably misnaming it. I'm almost positive it was them. There's more insight than I can glean from people smarter than me, but the movie has many, many layers, and it's awesome.
It's one of the first movies that I have seen where it's taken a trope in which someone sees something and tells other people about it and is not believed,
mm-hmm.
and has a double meaning.
Mm.
The horror trope of like, I saw this and that, and it's fucking crazy, and people are not going to believe you because it's fucking crazy to hear about. That's a horror trope, but in this one, it's also about spousal abuse, verbal, I don't know, physical. It was in that movie for sure. Verbal was physical. Do we remember physical?
I think it's
after he turned
implied.
Invisible for sure, but I think it's implied.
I think it's implied.
And there's a big huge scene with Elizabeth Moss, and in fact, had there been any sort of, like, I don't know what kind of campaign Universal ran for that movie with the Oscars and everything, but the scene where she's at the kitchen table talking about her husband and like all the stuff that he used to do, should have earned her an Oscar nomination. Mm. It's one of the greatest scenes of that year and in any horror movie for sure. But I found that incredibly made to take that trope and sort of give it two sides, two angles of attack, to not be believed, because it's like, that's the thing that you see in all ghost stories. It's like, you know, there's this ghost and everybody's like, ghosts, but they're doing the same thing with spousal abuse, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I've now seen this movie probably five or six times after sleeping on it for a while. And it's one of those movies where it is dense and you should watch it all the way from the beginning. But anytime I come across it at any point, I'm going to sit down and watch the rest of it, because all the acts are amazing. That first sequence when she's trying to sneak out and has that plan is terrifying on its own. It's almost Quiet Placean, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where she has to do all this stuff. And then you have all the stuff where he's coming after, and you have the technological thing, and then you have the trauma thing, and then you have that beautiful, I say it's beautiful, it's horrific. There's that little microaggression that I see from the guy that's trying to hire her as an architect. Where he says, you know, she studied in Paris, and he says something like, oh, is that where they keep all the beautiful women? It's completely brushed under the rug, never comes up again, but it's one of those little things that Lee Whannell puts in there to make it extra spicy. And it's such a beautifully constructed movie. I agree with you, Chris. I think this, you know, we can talk about horror movies being shut out of Oscars and everything, but I think this should have been up there with some of the best pictures of that year that came out.
And it's not as though she's not nominated for her other work. It's clear that Hollywood acknowledges that she's a fantastic actress. So I think there is a little bit of a horror bias there. Because Handmaid's Tale, and I haven't seen it, I'm sure she's great in it, but Handmaid's Tale, sure, give her all the awards. Didn't this incredible performance? Well, we saw it. It was good.
I mean,
Meryl Streep was in another movie. Didn't you know that?
Right. Ricky and the Flash.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you think of some of the dramas and people who get nominated in those dramas, you know, when you think of some of those movies, it's like, seriously, you're going to look down on a horror movie, but you're going to raise this piece of fucking tripe up, you know, just because it's a drama. Lee Whannell, I was about to say this is a guy that, as we go into this new decade, might be one of our new, you know, top directors or whatever. I mean, Upgrade is really fun, and mm-hmm. Of course, Invisible Man's really good. But fun, and not to say that these are going to be bad or that these are his only projects, but coming up, he's got a Wolfman movie coming up.
Yeah.
He's got an Escape from New York remake coming up, and he's got the Upgrade TV series coming up, which might be good. But you know, you want to see with these guys that are, I mean, he's not really new, but I mean, directing wise, obviously he's fairly new.
It's interesting to watch so many up-and-comers who are great pivot so early to known properties, right? Like when Denis mm-hmm. Villeneuve announced Blade Runner, the sequel, I was like, okay, Arrival was something new, at least to me. And even Joseph Kaczynski did that after Oblivion and then Only the Brave. He went to the Top Gun Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
That may have just been the lure of Tom Cruise or something, I guess. But it's interesting. So far, I mean, Villeneuve pulled it off. Maybe Kaczynski will with Top Gun Maverick. Maybe Lee Winnell will make the first good Wolfman movie in the history of ever.
I honestly would expect something amazing Wolfman. I mean, Wolfman movies have become really old and stale, although those independent ones that have come out in the last couple of years have been really good. But you're right. It's almost like they look at the challenge of remaking something into something that's, you know, way better than what we normally see that's the challenge for them. You know, like this is the, you know, we want to make something. Yeah, it's a remake, but it's a really good remake this time. So they put in, you know, these people who think differently into those remakes, and you're either going to get Denis Villeneuve or you're going to get, you know, a Colin Trevorrow or something like that. You know, just does what the studio tells them to do or whatever. By the way, going back on Spontaneous, there's, I think, a scene both Jeremy and I share as far as loving. And that's when the new kid that becomes her boyfriend shows up. She's telling the story of how they met and how he first noticed her and everything. He comes into the class and Catherine Langford is like she's looking back at her friend or something. And then she turns and sees him and there's like a moment and then she hisses at him. she just does this, you know, or whatever. And it's just it's a funny and it's a, you know, a sexy scene too. I mean, it's one of those kind of things where it's just like, I don't know what that is, but it's the perfect thing for her to do at that moment.
That's great.
Hereditary is the first one that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. These A24 horror movies all have a, you know, they're all kind of like abstract in many ways, like they don't follow real studio film norms and everything. Hereditary is a kind of a dense movie to get through sometimes. But mm-hmm. when I first watched it, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I like this. And then I send it and I was like, man, I love this movie. And there's just something about it. It's just so dark. It's exactly what horror movies should be. This just, you know, there's no demon that's just kind of like fucking with everybody for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's this slow creep of, you know, like indoctrination, I guess, in some ways of this sort of a cult. I guess it's a cult, basically, that's trying to accomplish this, great thing with this family. And the movie is, well, you're not going to feel good ever during this movie.
No.
If you watch movies to feel good, you're not going to watch Hereditary. find so many ways to just is there even a rug to pull out? I mean, it's like it immediately just goes right off into the deep end and is just sullen all the
what
way
also
through.
Accomplishes surprises without jump scares, I think. Mm-hmm. Now there are you could debate how that definition is applied, but it's surprises. I don't remember violin shrieks when you see certain things that happen
in this
movie. It doesn't feel cheap. The surprises that you get in this movie, of which there are many, and give you absolute chills, don't seem like they're shoved down your throat like in so many different ones.
And, Ann Dowd is another one of these great character actresses that have come out in the last. I mean, you know, she's been around forever, but she's finally getting recognition. Also on, what's it called? Handmaid's Tale. She was on that. She's on that too. She's great in this. Of course, Toni Collette is in one of her best performances. This is another one, by the way. Toni Collette. I think Toni Collette was actually getting real Oscar consideration for this movie and then didn't.
Didn't this come out early in the year? Or was it later on?
I think it was the summer when this came out. Because A24 does this sort of nice counter-programming thing movies that would typically come out in a February or a March or an October, November type of thing. They are like, nope, we're coming out with it in the summer because everybody's tired of superhero movies.
Come see Hereditary.
Right.
Watch Immolation.
That's right. Another one on this list is Get Out, of course. Get Out is one of the best movies of the past decade. Forget about the, horror movie aspect of it. I love how that trailer doesn't tell you anything. Like, that trailer really doesn't. There's something creepy going on, but you don't know exactly how creepy it is until you watch the movie. Like, it's not one of those things where the trailer presents this to you like, okay, here's a place where they take. Now, in this particular iteration of whatever that method that is going on, they are picking black people. We are sort of led to believe that it doesn't really matter. Over time, it just so happens to be in this time they are. The kind of racism that is being displayed here is something that was never talked about before.
Yep.
It's such an entertaining and well-made movie. If you haven't seen Get Out at this point, I mean, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Get Out is great. I don't think there's ever a discussion that talks about the more subtle versions of racism that come out there.
And he was nominated for an Oscar, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So, I mean, really, the Oscars have no excuse for missing out on the other horror stuff that they've done. This was nominated for screenplay. Well, I don't know about Best Picture. I don't think it was nominated for Best Picture or anything like that. But
Daniel Kaluuya was nominated.
He was, yes.
Did I say how bad? Oh, did I say?
He's so Daniel Kaluuya.
Well, he's great in everything I've seen him in.
Yes,
in that mob movie Sisters, Brothers. Hustlers.
Widows,
yeah.
He's fantastic in Widows.
God, he's terrifying in that fucking movie. Yeah, he's great in the Black Panther stuff, and he's incredible. I don't know if you guys have seen Judas and the Black Messiah yet.
Yeah, I have.
Absolutely, absolutely phenomenal in that movie.
Get Out was nominated for Best Picture and Director, by the way.
Oh, it was?
Nice. Yeah, I've forgotten about that. But yeah, Get Out is great. We've talked a little bit about the Suspiria remake, which is another extremely dense movie, but so beautifully shot and interesting throughout. It actually made people sort of debate whether or not they like this one or the older one, the classic one, better.
This is the case. This is the positive case for remakes, right?
It's weird though. Would we pick to make this remake though? Like, I've always considered remakes of movies that had the right idea but didn't execute it properly as the real remake potential. You have to have some balls of steel to be like, I'm remaking Suspiria.
Yeah, Dario Argento. Fuck that guy.
Well, it's such a go-to for horror fans, you know, as far as, you know, influential and best and all those lists that we make. Even though I didn't understand every single bit of Suspiria, the way it's shot and the way it's made, just a beautiful movie to watch.
Is this the best movie based on a Phil Collins song?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. No. Well, actually, no. I know Against All Odds is probably the best movie. But Suspiria's close. Suspiria's close.
I just have never been able to hear Suspiria without thinking Suspiria.
Hey, there's a South Park where they're making fun of Phil Collins because they lost to him in the Oscars in 1999 with that Tarzan song.
Yeah.
And so they put him in one of those episodes, and he's singing Suspiria. And they just add all these lyrics like, it's not even a word. So studio, not even a word. Boo-boo-boo-dio.
Oh my God. I tell you what, Suspiria, the original 77, something like that.
I think that's right.
Is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. I would watch the remake 11 times out of 10, over the original one.
Watch something an 11th time out of 10 tries?
I'm going to cram it in. I'm going to watch it while I'm watching
it. You can have one TV over here and another TV behind so that you can,
just got to keep it, you know,
that's what I'm saying. It's got to have a delay in there so that you can count it as two different ones and not just simultaneous.
Dakota Johnson, we've talked about Dakota Johnson before, but she is, this is the performance of an absolute lifetime in this movie. I think this is destined to become a classic. Maybe a subgenre of people will consider it a classic, but it's a brilliant, brilliant.
Will there be a subgenre of people who dismiss it as owing everything to the original Suspiria?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know, but those people are nerds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like because
who cares what those dweebs think? Yeah,
for me, and I may be completely wrong. To me, they're completely different movies. All they have in common is that it's a ballet company run by a bunch of witches, and they kill
run people. By a bunch of what? I haven't seen this movie.
Witches, and I again, first one, giallo slasher. You know, lots of bright red blood and stuff like that. The remake is styled in a completely different way. It's a completely, completely different movie to me. Both
but
are very,
would
very
it
good,
have
but...
ever been made if not for the original? I'm just being a troll.
Well,
never mind.
No,
it what about The Invisible Man? Would that ever been made with
That's true. You got a point.
Chevy Chase
without the Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Without a Hollow Man, there never would have been the Invisible Man.
Oh God, I cannot watch Hollow Man, by the way, anymore.
Oh, that is the skeeziest movie.
Wait, we talked about it before, and we're like, maybe a little bit. It leans into that.
I mean, Kevin Bacon. He sexually assaults Kim Dickens. He rapes Rona Mitra. I think he even does something with Elizabeth Shue. I don't think he gets all the way there, though. She gets away.
That's a fucked up movie to watch these days, man.
It's like he immediately went from invisibility to rape. Do not pass go. Ugh. Do not. He just, that was the first thing he thought of. Now that no one can see me, I'm going to do all the sex stuff.
Oh, God.
It's a skeezy movie.
My last one on the modern, and you know, you can debate whether or not it actually is classified as a horror movie, but Cabin in the Woods.
That's a horror movie, baby. That's a horror movie.
Yeah, but it's clearly making fun of it. I mean, it's also embracing it, but like nearly everything in this is played for laughs. Even the horror is, and I don't know if there's ever been. There's only been like three or four moments where I doubled over laughing or whatever in a theater watching it as a projectionist or watching a movie as a projectionist. That one where the elevator opens and all the creatures comes out, that was, I think I've said this before. I was so upset that this movie wasn't a bigger hit when it came out.
Yeah.
Because I would have loved to have, I did go into an auditorium with this movie playing on a Saturday night, and there was only like 20 or 30 people in it.
Oh, that's shit.
And I went to see that scene, and you know that it happened, and you're like, I mean, the reaction was okay, but you had 20 or 30 people in it. It wasn't it. You just imagine what it would have been like if there were 300 people in it.
Yeah.
And that's what I was hoping for. It's kind of like 8 Mile when, you know, he starts rapping good in 8 Mile.
Yeah.
And
you know that part where he starts rapping good.
He starts rapping good. You go into the theater and hear him doing all those like awesome ones and everything, and everybody's like, "Oh!" You know, the whole theater's like getting into it. You know, that's what you want out of crowd reaction. But yeah, anyway, Cabin in the Woods is another one that
That scene. I don't love very many movies that have scenes I actually can't watch. But when she makes out with the head of that fucking wolf on the wall, cannot watch that. I have to turn away because it shrivels my bits and but I think the movie's great, obviously, and what's fascinating to me is how much of it I think hinges on Bradley Whitford and
Richard Jenkins,
the way they play those guys. You can feel the seasoning. They've been through this a million times, and this is the way they fuck with the watcher guy on the on the speakerphone. Wait, am I still on speakerphone? They start laughing.
No. Or the best line in the movie is the, you know, I was almost starting to root for her. And maybe she could have. Tequila is my lady.
Yeah, I love this movie. This is probably one of my top five favorite horror movies ever. It's it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, and I mean, when it came out, it was hard to, I was working at a theater and I was talking to people about how I loved it around there. And even people who worked in movie theaters were just like, they were expecting, you know, fucking Cabin Fever or some shit.
Yeah.
And they didn't get Cabin Fever. And so they thought the funny stuff was dumb like that. I don't understand that. Something remember that's super entertaining.
How the trailers sold this movie.
Well, it was weird how I remember in the trailer that showing like a typical, you know, college kids going to the cabin in the woods type of horror movie. And then they show that eagle fly into the big fucking electric barrier or whatever. And I think a lot of people were like, what the fuck? And just didn't. We're not curious to watch it.
Yeah.
that was that most of it, I think, centered on that cabin in the woods stuff. I don't think they kept all that, you know, institution stuff, a surprise, I think, in that trailer. I don't think they showed much Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins in that.
Yeah, I don't think you, I mean, it's probably a tough situation. I don't think you can really show what the movie is in a 2-minute trailer. I don't think you could, once you start incorporating the Bradley Whitford stuff, I think you end up with viewers who are confused and you also ruin the joke. You know, the movie doesn't take a super long time to tip its hand to you, but you know, the first 10 minutes or so, you're like, okay, this is a typical horror movie with hot people in it. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
And then it starts showing you this is what this really is.
Pretty sure that they showed, you know, them in the basement when they have all the different choices that are going to unlock whatever monster they're going to unleash. And, you know, they just, I think that, yeah, they, pre- I'll have to watch that trailer again, but I don't remember too much Bradley Whitford and Richard Jenkins in that trailer. And I think that's what it was. I think people were just expecting your typical cabin in the woods movie and they didn't get that.
No.
How do we feel about, I agree with you, this movie's nearly perfect, but how do we feel about that ending? Like the ending?
I mean,
how do we feel about the ending?
Yeah.
It's kind of, I've always thought it was kind of weird how they've skirted so many different rules about this. You know, like it, they, and you know, the, I don't know. It's just weird to me that at the end, the monsters are not appeased, even though, I don't know. It just seemed like,
yeah, that ending is just so like it's unique, but it's also like, you have all this wonderful momentum, especially with the merman scene and the elevator scene. And all this stuff, and all the bat like flying through when he's about to shoot her and everything. And then it seems like
it's massive exposition.
Slows. Like it really noticeably
it's
slows.
Like, let's bring in legend Sigourney Weaver to explain what's going on here. And she does. And it's like, God damn it. We were having a lot of fun. And now it's just, we're explaining what we do. And we're explaining why there are quirks in it. And we're, you know, it's, I don't know. Yeah. I like how the very end is, where
the last shot is amazing.
Yeah. Yes. But where they're like, you know, they need the blood of a virgin. And then, you know, she's like, me, virgin. And he goes, well, we make do with what we can. And yeah, it's like, it's no, like,
whatever.
No, you say that these monsters have very specific tastes and you can't just, you know, you give them blood of non-virgins here.
No, if you want virgin, you need virgin.
Yeah. What and I understand why it's so hard to find virgins either.
What I appreciate about the end of the movie is the mic dropness of it all. The balls to say, you know what? Heroes don't win. The world is going to end. It's all over. Mm-hmm. I like that. But I'm telling you, Drew Goddard is the man. You know, you go from this to Bad Times at the El Royale, which you have a hard time finding a section that slows down with exposition the way the end of Cabin in the Woods does. Yeah. I'm telling you, he's the guy to watch. He's the guy to watch. No. Now watch. He's going to come out next week and say, I'm doing a remake of The Fugitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be hilarious.
I'm remaking Blank Check.
The exposition in Blank Check. The exposition in Bad Times at the El Royale is so perfect because when you get the bellhop telling you at the end what he saw and everything, that's a scene full of tension and you're leaning into that shit. You're like, holy, a wolf?
Yeah. It wasn't sexual. It wasn't not sexual.
It wasn't not sexual.
So my modern ones. Are you done with your modern ones?
Yep. I was about to say, all right, let's go with yours.
This is stretching modern. When we talk about classics in a little bit, I set my classics anything before 2000 because it's been 21 years, for God's sakes. Now, they're certainly older than that, and we could dig into it. But yeah, for modern, I went, the first one was 2008 movie that absolutely scared the shit out of me. Now with horror, I rarely get super scared, but The Strangers is a movie that absolutely killed me.
I love The Strangers, man. Why are you doing this? Because you were home.
Listen, it has all of the elements.
Liv Tyler.
Yeah, yes. It's Liv Tyler. Okay. Yeah, you get this confused with Vacancy, the Luke Wilson.
And at least one other one, but yes.
The Strangers is literally Liv Tyler and Scott Speedman, Felicity Scott Speedman,
Underworld Scott Speedman.
Yes. And it's what? It's a cast of five, essentially. You know, it's
pretty
much. No, six. It's
there's because, there's Glenn, definitely another person, but yeah. Glenn Howerton.
Glenn Howerton. Yeah. But yeah, it's a super small cast and it's super remote. Everything makes sense. All the scares make sense. It's a woman showing up after a couple is having kind of like an argument, a complicated relationship. Woman shows up at the door, can't see her face. She's looking for somebody. She goes off. That was weird. Then Scott Speedman goes for cigarettes. Liv Tyler is left alone. Starts hearing banging. Everyone's worst fear. You're alone at night. No cell reception. And there's just an unidentified banging on the door. The masks that the strangers wear are fantastic. The reasoning, which Chris mentioned at the beginning, is horrifying. Everything about this movie, the ending of this movie is terrifying. It literally builds up. There's no let up in the tension, and I absolutely love it. The Strangers, yeah. And I hear that the sequel, The Strangers Pray at Night, is actually really good too. I haven't seen that one.
Really?
But The Strangers is absolutely one of, and it holds up on multiple viewings to scare the shit out of it.
I was all by myself.
Nobody was looking.
I was alone.
And my other one is a horror movie that I don't even, that doesn't scare me, but I think is beautiful, is It Chapter One. I think that's one of my favorite horror movies that doesn't really freak me out. Now, there are a couple of scenes in there that will, you know, tickle your chill bones. But in general, I'm not scared of clowns. I know a lot of people are.
That was such a flex. I'm not scared of clowns.
Come clowns. At me, bro.
What are you going to do with your red nose and your big shoes?
I know a lot of people are fundamentally scared of clowns. And Pennywise, Bill Skarsgård is fantastic in this role as Pennywise, but it's just not like a scary premise to me. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense when you think about it too. Like, you know, it's the collective fears that make them more tasty and stuff like that. I think the absolute best part of this is the Stand By Me-ness of the cast and the writing and the direction. And especially the cast, man. Sophia Lillis and Finn Wolfhard and Jaden Martell. Like, they all just coalesce perfectly. And it's shot the way that something like a Rob Reiner would shoot Stand By Me. Or even fucking Frank Darabont, who's really good at Stephen King.
Well, it's the Stand By Me-ness of it all that works. Like, the scary stuff, I, too... I'm not scared of clowns. The scary stuff doesn't work as well for me. I almost, you know, it's his career. I'm very curious about this Flash movie he's making. So, you know, more power to him. But I'm almost more interested in seeing him doing coming of age type stuff. That quarry scene is the linchpin of the whole movie, as far as I'm concerned.
It's so beautiful.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Nostalgia, friendship, budding romance. It's perfect. I agree. I love this movie. It's a shame the second one had to come out.
It really is. It really is. The second one, I've tried to go back to it many times, man. I cannot get on board with it.
Doomed to failure. The second half of it, the book, is not very good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's because adults are shitty, man. You
know, yeah, who cares?
They are.
Yeah,
they are.
That's a movie. That's a book that should have ended after the kids beat it at the
right.
The
and then
time.
When they made a movie of it and it made $100 million, the studio would have said, "What about a sequel?" And then they could have done the adults, and it would have failed, and everyone would have learned a lesson.
And they wouldn't. Yeah, yeah, exactly. They would have learned a lesson that they were doomed to repeat.
Exactly.
Okay, so then what about classic horror movies?
Ooh. This is where I wanted to slap Bear on the face because he stole my shining. Oops. August gave away one of Bear's. I didn't mean it. You can bleep me. I have always said that Alien is one of my two favorite horror movies of all time. It is heavily science fiction, but that does not mean it cannot be scary as fuck. And it's basically one of the scariest things I ever saw. To this day, it freaks me the fuck out. It's part creature design, part the setting, part, I don't know. It's just, it's every bit as tense and slow scary as the sequel is action gun heavy romp.
Yeah. It's gooey too.
It's what?
It's gooey.
Hmm.
Oh, you mean
you're just talking about the goo that's in
just
the movie.
Goo. There's a lot of goo in Alien.
Slime and goo.
Slime and goo. And that makes everything more creepy.
And there's an orange kitty.
There is.
Actually, I thought, I don't know why, but I thought you were making some kind of reference to Stan Winston. Is he involved in this movie?
I don't think so.
H.R. Giger, Geiger, Giger, whatever.
He did the creature design.
Yeah.
Because it looks great. It looks absolutely real. It does not look like a fake ass.
Giger on the visual effects, too, along with Carlo Rambaldi, who... later of Alias Rambaldi fame.
Yes.
That's who they named it after.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Brian Johnson, Nick Alder, and Dennis Ayling were all winners for best visual effects.
Well, they deserved it.
Mm-hmm, yep. So
yeah, you're right. No, the setting is perfect. You know, the hole in space, no one can hear you scream. What they did this in, well, see, this was 79, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did Dark Star come out before, right around that, right?
Yeah, way before, like 5 years before. 5 years before.
Because
that was Carpenter.
Right. Now, I know that had a much different tent, but it was also kind of a horror movie set in space.
And then you had Dan O'Bannon, who was on, the screenplay of Alien was on Dark Star as well. A lot of people who were associated with Alien were on Dark. Well, a few people who were on Alien were associated with Dark Star.
Interesting.
So it may only be Dan O'Bannon though. For all I know, could be more. Not sure.
My other classic. I'm stretching the definition, but I think it meets Barrett's definition. Maybe not. Is Scream?
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Scream is a total classic at this point.
The very first one, I know there's a lot of people who have tons of love for the second one, and I enjoy bits of it.
Yeah,
I think the third one is a visit to the dentist, and the fourth one was just a little too cute for its own good.
Yeah.
But recently we've got the trailer for the new one, which I've been calling Scream 5, but apparently... just called Scream, because that won't confuse anyone.
Yep. Right.
And it looks great. And it looks like the closest to the original of any of the sequels that we've had so far. And it's the dudes that were involved in Ready or Not and VHS who are making it. So promising. But the original Scream still holds up pretty well. One thing I noticed in the trailer for the new one is how much new technology they're incorporating, like an app that can lock all your doors and text messaging. And of course that, you know, that's all missing from the first one because cell phones weren't universal yet. And I guess I don't feel like those kinds of things date a movie when those movies are set in that era when the technology wasn't around. That mm-hmm. classic opening scene with Drew Barrymore where if you're me, you're not expecting her to be offed before the movie actually kicks into gear. Mm-hmm. So that's an initial shock to the system. It's crazy to me that Kevin Williamson got so much hype after this movie and got so much rope and never wrote anything that came close to this. Like,
yeah.
How much was Wes Craven?
Mrs. Tingle?
Teaching Mrs. Tingle.
Yeah. And he was.
Disturbing Behavior, I think. Well, maybe that's just a Katie Holmes connection.
I don't remember him on that, but I mean, Dawson's Creek was his, you know, was his thing, I guess.
That was before Scream, right?
Yeah. And then he, as far, yeah, I mean, as far as movies are concerned, yeah, he never replicated that. And Scream, I'm trying to remember if there was anything beyond Teaching
Mrs. I know what Tingle. You did last summer, The Faculty, yeah. Teaching Mrs. Tingle. So
he's got a lane, man.
Well, I mean, I like The Faculty, but none of those are as good as Scream, even though I Know What You Did Last Summer has its diehard fans for some ungodly reason. Mm-hmm. I feel like that movie is
the
like...
The ladies.
Well, it's the ladies. It's also like, let's cast everyone who can't act. Like, everyone is bad
Ryan
in that
Phillippe
movie.
Against
Freddie
Jennifer
Prince
Love
Jr.,
Hewitt.
Ryan Phillippe, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Jennifer Love Hewitt, all of them are bad in that movie. All of them. They're pretty. I guess that's the point.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? I think I talked about this with Jonathan, but you guys, or maybe Barrett, I don't remember who brought this up, but that was not even in the screenplay. Yeah.
It was me. They did a contest.
Oh, it was you.
And the student who won the contest got to direct a shot. That was basically, and I'm pretty sure it was intended to just be standing behind the camera and saying action, but the kid had the idea, what if we did this where she spun in a circle and that's the fuck, that's why it's so fucking out of place in the whole movie, is that a kid suggested it and they just did it.
Yeah.
It really is, man. She gets fed up because the body in the trunk isn't there anymore. And then she turns around and then all of a sudden just bursts into this fucking thing. And you're like, what? Hang on one second. What?
I of course love Scream, and I had been working in movie theaters for 4 years at that. Well, 3 years at that time when it came out, and we were at a theater that didn't do much business really. And we put Scream in one of our smaller auditoriums on opening weekend because we just didn't think it would do anything. And opening weekend, it barely did really much. I mean, it did okay. And then it got a word of mouth going that made it where it was bigger the next week than it was last week. And Cool Springs Galleria, which was the theater that was just always kicking our ass and everything, didn't have Scream, and it was amazing. It was like when Borat said they can't have the iPod or whatever, his neighbor or his rival can't afford the iPod shovel or whatever. It was funny because I remember this was actually probably a bad decision on my part, but I was talking to my manager saying we should keep it in this small theater because everybody packed in together, watching it. And we sort of limit how many people can see it at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes it a different experience. If you put it in a big auditorium, it's not going to have the same effect and everything. And so we kept this movie in this small auditorium, selling it out on Friday and Saturday nights, but it kept going and going and going. And I thought it was cool, even though we probably should have put it in a bigger auditorium to sell more tickets. But I still felt like the experience of that small theater with a bunch of people was the best way to go about it. And every time, that was another crowd reaction movie. I would always walk into that one. And I loved it. It was one of those where I didn't expect much from it because the trailer looked shitty. It was one of these early Dimension Miramax films that came out, and the trailer was like, you know, it tried to sound like a regular horror movie, and David Arquette at the end putting his flashlight, "You're not scared, are you?" And it just looked like a regular horror movie. So like, I wasn't expecting anything from it. And it was a tremendous surprise. And of course now it's made, you know, it's got a whole franchise around it.
Are they styling the S in Scream as a 5? Like a Fast and Furious like type it. Of
no.
thing?
No, no, they patterned the A as a 5. No, they don't have a 5. They don't have a 5 at all.
I was doing some mental acrobatics.
I was looking for the letter least likely. The C, maybe? The C's probably not.
I was like, hang on. That could probably work in some way.
Yeah, you were thinking of it in your head, and it's like, no, no.
Yeah.
The C probably would be the hardest to make a 5 out of. That would probably
I think
be.
So. Yeah.
Okay, on my classics, I've always talked about Halloween. I know that's Jonathan's favorite horror movie as well. And I've talked a lot about how Halloween just makes you constantly search the edges of the frame for Michael Myers. And I think that movie is just so well done, and nobody ever makes horror movies like that anymore. And it spawned, you know, 40 million sequels, and none of them have done anything close to what that first movie did. The second one is a continuation. It's the same night. It's at a hospital, but it just doesn't have the same magic whatsoever. And part three, of course, infamously doesn't have Michael Myers in it. And it's about a mind control thing. Then sticking with Carpenter, The Thing. We've talked a lot about The Thing. That movie, every time I pop it in, it gets better and better and better and better.
I haven't watched that movie since the 90s.
I recommend watching it again. It's incredible now, and obviously was not a big hit when it came out, but it has developed a big following since, and I think it classifies as a great movie at this point. I had a question as to what constitutes classic anymore. Does it have to have 20 years behind it, or is it maybe past 10 years, or is it? I think The Descent is old enough at this point to say that it's probably a classic. It came out in 2006. 15 years may not be considered a classic for some of you guys, but I always sit there and think, man, when I was a kid in 1987 and people were talking about The Godfather, it was being referred to as a classic, and that was only 15 years old at the time. The Descent is a movie that I need to see again, but I remember it being amazing, and the way it presents its horror is amazing. I saw a woman running out of this theater when it was playing one night and was like nearly hyperventilating because she was so scared.
Yep.
The Descent is fantastic. The Others, which, you know, came out during a time where it was hard to surprise audiences because it seemed like there was a surprise ending in every movie that was coming out around that time, especially horror movies. The Sixth Sense was only a couple years old when The Others came out. The Others has a great ending. I think most people can probably figure out what it is, what's going to happen nowadays. But back in the day, I didn't have any idea what was going to happen.
No, because it was spooky enough on its own. It wasn't necessarily like, this is a movie that has a little bit of a comparison. The Skeleton Key, the Kate Hudson thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It has a big twist at the end. I don't know if I buy that it was as spooky. It had to do a lot with voodoo and stuff like that. But The Others was spooky as shit all the way through. And then that ending just absolutely, it was like jab, 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 uppercut.
I mean, it plays exactly like what a regular horror movie plays like. It's people in a house hearing weird noises. The kids seem to see
that, you know, seem to be interacting with the ghosts. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, okay. So it's one of those type of movies. And then it just like turns it around on you. Love that movie. Audition, which Barrett recently talked about a bunch. I can't remember.
It was on movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, you can't get that out of your head. Oh my God. Oh yeah. Yeah. Audition is amazing. The Blair Witch Project. I have, along with Jeremy and Barrett, we have different relationship to this movie because of the tape that was rolling around before the movie came out. Mm-hmm. And so we got to see that movie before it came out in theaters. And I thought the sort of the viralness of that tape was what was made that movie great. And of course the use of the internet, which back then people were still trying to figure out how do we work this thing.
how do we work this internet?
Yeah. And, you know, I remember going to the Blair Witch site and finding like, it was showing you actual crime scene photos. Here is the picture of the van or the Jeep that they were in before they went into the woods. You're like, oh shit, is this for real? Did this actually happen? And you know, I think of course a movie like this with all of its shaky cam and all of its willing and like not willingness to give you outright scares like during the entire movie, really it's really about sound and some visuals that are creepy. It hardly ever gets to that point. I actually never gets to that point where there's an actual monster on screen.
No, never. You see dude in the corner.
No, and that's still the most haunting image.
And how do you even come up with that? How do you go, all right, the last shot, we're going to reveal that one of the guys is in the corner, facing the corner, and we're going to end right there.
Could be
and
taking a leak.
People will be creeped the fuck out, but it's creepy. Like, because you, in an instant, your brain processes all this. What the fuck is he doing? Why would he be there? What did the monster do to him to make him do that? Where's the witch? Is she going to do that to me? Why am I not in the corner? And it's all happening at once.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie's freaky. Now, Chris, you and I worked at Hollywood 27. There were genuine celebrity sightings there. Mm. Now, I was working one night of Blair Witch, and I was told Tom Petty was in the building.
Oh, yes.
And had gone in to watch Blair Witch. I did not personally see Tom Petty, but two of my ushers were standing outside that theater, peeking in the porthole whenever they could, hoping to see Tom Petty, I guess, get up to take a leak or something. And the story goes, halfway through, he got up and left through the exit door outside of the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue he was not enjoying the movie, which, let's face it, I don't think Tom Petty is a Blair Witch kind of guy. But I argue like people were like staring at him like my ushers were. And I think he just got tired of the not being incognito and left. But there you go. Headline tomorrow. We'll read Tom Petty hated Blair Witch left. Right.
That's exactly what's going to happen. Like, I think there was an interview recently with Michael Williams, who played Mike, of course, in the movie, who is the one standing, in the corner at the end. And I think that the way that they came up with that, if I remember, was mundane. Like they just said, hey, stand in the corner here. And I don't think they had any mythology behind it or anything. They just kind of, they just said, let's just do this or whatever. I don't remember. I got to find that article. But if I recall, it was a pretty mundane thing that they did that. And, but they build it up so well because there's two different sources of there's sound, and then there's her, and then there's Heather's video. Mm-hmm. So we're hearing her sound, but we're hearing other sound from I can't remember if it's a recorder or if it's another video camera. I can't remember. It's not another video camera, I don't think, but there are two sources. But you hear Mike leaves, and then she's upstairs somewhere, and then she gets scared and starts running down the stairs, and like there's this whole like build up to like what the fuck happened to Mike, and you're expecting her to come down and see him like, you know, opened up like it's an autopsy or something, and you know, his organs are ripped out or something. But like, just the fact that he's just standing there with, you know, just standing there is scarier than any kind of violence that they could have shown.
Yep. It's framed beautifully. I mean, it's her scream. It's her reaction. It's the, what you don't see. You only see, it's probably last maybe 2 seconds of him standing in the corner that she drops the camera, her scream. That's it.
Yeah. And then, the camera's just static on the floor for like 5 seconds. And then it goes to the credits.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who did not like that movie at all, obviously. And I got to run into a lot of them being an usher manager at the time. There were the worst thing about Blair Witch, and Jeremy knows this, and I think we've even discussed this, is that people were getting motion sickness during the movie, and they were vomiting in the theater. They couldn't make it to the bathroom. They had to vomit right there.
You know, the only thing that smells worse than vomit is that shit you put on the vomit after somebody vomits.
Yeah.
And that actually is a worse smell. And so for a week or more, that entire auditorium just had a faint air of vomit.
It was
chemical cleanup.
Awful. Was
this, hold on. This happened a lot like in the theater?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Well,
it happened nearly every showing.
Yeah,
it happened. No way.
Yeah, dude, it was we had that shit in a closet next to the theater after like one day because it was happening so often. Like we started warning people.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, it's shaky. No. You might puke. I'll be good.
Yeah. And I've never understood. I mean, you know, different people have different reactions to things, obviously, but I've never understood. I've never understood the feeling that you need to vomit. And then you can't make it to a bathroom in time.
Look away from the goddamn screen.
I've never understood that.
Yeah. Oh, but they just go right there?
Yeah.
Blair Witch was what, July? Something that came out in around July, I think. I can't remember exactly. But those theaters smelt of all of that for probably 3 months at least, if not more.
Oh, no. Oh, no. And you guys had to address it?
Well, I didn't. I just told
I mean, I actually didn't do much box office stuff, so I don't remember the warnings, but...
No. I mean, you had to, like, clean up.
Yeah, I mean, ushers are constantly throwing that cover-up shit over it, and then you mop it up or whatever, and... But it still smells.
What is the cover-up stuff? Because, like, at the shop, we would put, like, oatmeal stuff on an oil spill to get the oil
up. It's a chemical version of that. It smells nasty, and you combine that with the vomit, and it's somehow worse.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same shit at Kroger when I worked there. I think it's pretty standard stuff, but, it was best.
I remember
some Stand By Me.
Yeah. I remember some dude coming out of that movie going, like, I was walking towards the theaters, like 15 and 16. And this guy comes out and he came right up to me and I was like, oh no, cause this is the way it is in theaters. Like when a customer comes out and immediately wants to talk to you, you're like, God damn it. What happened? But he's like, hey man, this movie, this just isn't entertainment, man. This just isn't entertainment. And I was like, okay, well, you can go to customer service and get a refund pass if you like. I'm not going to force you to stay in.
Yeah, it was baked off his ass, man. This just isn't entertainment, man.
Yeah. The last one that I threw on the classics, and I know Barrett will appreciate this, is the original Wicker Man.
That's freaky. Freaky deaky stuff.
wicka man.
Freaky deaky.
I mean, Wicker Man. You know, the remake would be creepy too if it wasn't so hilarious.
That's true. This is true.
Yeah, I still want to know kind of what happened there. Who was the director of that? It was somebody.
Neil LaBute.
What a weirdsmobile.
Dude, I mean, original Wicker Man is the epitome of unsettling, culty horror movie that will only be replicated, in my mind, by something like Midsommar. Talk about daytime horror. There's really no shadowy, foggy.
That's what's crazy about Midsommar, right?
It's well, yeah, it is. And with the original Wicker Man too, it's just mm-hmm. all out there. I think it's summer in Northern England/Scotland, and just everything happens in the daytime, but horrific shit happens and people are acting weird and nobody mm-hmm. punches a woman or dresses in a bear costume.
Right.
That's interesting. I wish more people would explore that, because I don't know why I just flashed to Zodiac, because it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but the killing they show in the daytime by the lake is 10 times more terrifying than the opening one in the dark with the car that comes back.
I agree.
There's something about being able to see it that actually makes it scary. I guess it depends. We could go too far in that direction, but
no, yeah. This is what The Strangers has, that great ending where they take care of business, not at night when they're all freaked out and everything, but in the morning when they're all tied up, they're like, okay. And then every one of the family members gets a stabby in, like Murder on the Orient Express. And like it just does the thing.
A couple of other things popped up when you're talking about this daytime horror stuff. We interviewed Bria Grant, who did the movie Lucky, and there's a moment in that movie, like, so the premise is that there is someone who is coming to kill her and her husband every night, and they have to fight this person off. And in the movie, it's presented as the first time, you know, she, after it happens the first time in the movie, she asks her husband, we've got to do something about this. We got to call the cops. And he's like, well, this is, he goes, the husband's like, well, every night this guy comes and tries to kill us. So we just try to beat him every night. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's like, yeah, every night this guy comes and everything. And so when she starts actually talking to the cops are, you know, she's like, don't I need some security here and all that? And they're like, well, you don't need any security right now. It's daytime, you know? And they keep saying stuff like that. It's daytime. What does it, you know, like what does daytime fucking have to matter? You know, why does it matter? Documentaries can be scary too. Paradise Lost, which was about the West Memphis, killings. That movie starts off with, I don't know what your definition of graphic is, but it starts off with the shot of the boys that are in who have been killed in this riverbed. Mm-hmm. And it shows actual footage of them just lying dead there. And when you hear the story about when they were last seen, I mean, this is after school when they were last seen. Over the years, there's been five documentaries about West Memphis 3 and, and all the twists and turns, like they got the wrong people and then the wrong people, they've known they've had the wrong people for all this time, but there were all these different technicalities that kept them in prison and whatever. But, you know, you hear this story and you you're pretty sure one of the parents did it. And it's just like, this happened during the daytime. This happened, you know, out in the woods in the daytime. I mean, daytime can be pretty freaking scary sometimes.
Yeah. I actually think we may have an accidental future topic.
Yeah.
Scariest daylight moments in movies.
Ooh.
Because you have me wanting to bring up True Detective, the first season, scariest moment of that entire season.
Yeah.
Is that dude with the elephant nose gas mask and the music goes, wah!
Yeah.
But it's in broad fucking daylight. That could be a topic, I think, one day.
I think so.
I like it. My classic, so I've got one. Everybody agrees is a great classic horror movie, Rosemary's Baby. That's another one where there's not horrific violence that you see overtly, except for a dream sequence that's not a dream sequence.
And for the lady that throws herself off the building, but you don't really see that.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of just an impending dread type of thing. It's a brilliant movie. Mia Farrow carries that movie. And I choose to not give any credit to Roman Polanski for actually pulling it off.
There's something about the Rosemary's Baby has that. I mean, at the very end, when there's something there's nothing like threatening in any way about, you know, I think it depends on how you perceive horror a lot of times, but that final moment where everybody just out of nowhere is just like, "Hail Satan." Yeah. It just gives you chills. Yep. It gives you chills, man. Yep. I mean, cause they haven't overtly said this at all during the entire thing. Of course, the whole ending of this is, you know, a somewhat surprise or whatever. You don't know exactly what's going on until finally everybody's like, "Well, baby's born. It's Satan's kid now." You know, all enjoying tea in the, yeah, exactly. They're all enjoying tea and they're like, "Well, I feel pretty free to say hail Satan right about now."
Hey. And they're all geriatric and none of them are physically imposing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's these people encroaching into this poor woman's life.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way out of it, even though there's plenty of ways out of it. In her situation, there's really no way out of it. And her husband being complicit, there's a lot going on in that movie.
He's fucking with her drugs too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's giving her those prenatal shakes or whatever it is that she has to take, and that she's got the thing around her neck for a while. Just all of this is just icky. And it feels icky, and it makes you feel it's Satan's baby.
Mm-hmm,
It's not Rosemary's baby. It's Satan's baby now.
That's right.
Sorry. One before I get to my major one, one that I think is overlooked a little bit from 1997 is Cube.
Cube.
This was another movie that I discovered on videotape, much like Blair Witch. That somebody brought over, much like Donnie Darko too, actually. Somebody brought over and was like, "Have you seen this?" And I'm like, "No, I don't know what this is." No actors that you've really heard of. Certainly not at the time. Bare bones budget.
Mm-hmm.
But as creepy as hell. These people wake up in a cube and have, or they don't, a cubed cell, and they have no idea what they're doing. They're all in individual cubes, and they have to go into different ones that all look a little bit different, that all have booby traps. Some are safe, some are not. You don't know which is which. The audience is totally on the ride as the characters are figuring out what the fuck is going on here. And it has a very satisfying ending. It has a very satisfying mystery to it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else about this movie, like I said, the effects are not great. The acting is as wooden as shit.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this movie is appealing. I love movies like this. I love movies where you don't know what the fuck is going on. And by the end of it, you still don't know what's going on. You still have no fucking clue what's going on. But you know that it's freaky, and I love it.
I think there it's gotten quite the cult following over the years,
and it it's also spawned off at least two sequels. And I've seen one of them, I think one of the later ones, and it's pretty good. They keep the same similar concept. I don't think they get into, you know, why anyone's doing this. You know, that's the issue with Escape Room, which we all liked. You know, we didn't know why they were doing all this stuff until the very end, where they were hinting at a bigger conspiracy. And I'm like you, Chris, with the, "I don't care about the revolution. Just show me the Running Man."
Yep.
I don't care about the conspiracy behind why they're doing this. I just care what they're doing.
It's weird because they set up this story where, obviously, there are, an evil oppressive regime is behind all of this. And I think that people who make these movies think, well, we've got to figure out a way for these people to win in the end. They need to beat the regime and stop them from doing this. But they sort of forget the initial hook of why you went to go watch those movies in the first place.
Yep.
And that's way Hunger Games was for me. You know, Hunger Games, yeah, I feel for you. It's shitty living in this fucking place, but I just want to see you guys kill each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's all in good competition and clean fun.
It's all good, clean fun.
Yeah, exactly. But then, yeah, like after the first Hunger Games, you know, it's like, oh, how do we take them down? It's like the next three movies is all about, you know, even in the second one where it was just like, you know, we're not really here for the games. We're here to like take down the, you know, we're here to kidnap Katniss and help us with our revolution and all
that. Right.
God damn it. And I just want to see everybody get thrown into an arena and kill each other. Mm-hmm. That's all I want.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And of course, my last one is The Shining, which is another one where the only moment that scares me in The Shining, weirdly enough, is the moment where Danny's playing in the hallway and that ball rolls up to him and stops perfectly. And really, there's no other explanation. We don't know who threw it, whether it was the ghost in 237. We don't know if it's the hotel, if it's the Native Americans. We don't know where that ball came from. But that freaks me the fuck out. The rest of it is a performance. It's a great performance by Jack Nicholson. I think it's a great performance by Shelley Duvall. I think just overall, the mood of this movie is just one of my favorite things ever.
Yeah.
Of course it's expertly shot. Of course it's expertly laid out. But there's a reason why this movie, I think of all of Stanley Kubrick's movies outside of maybe 2001 A Space Odyssey, is the most dissected. Because there's just so much going on that I don't think you really ever get in a horror movie. It's just brilliant all the way around. And I can watch it a million times, which I have.
Yeah. It's funny how this is the most dissected Stanley Kubrick movie ever made.
Yeah.
Unlike something like Spartacus, which is 7 hours long.
Yeah.
And has a lot to dissect.
I mean, Spartacus, I think 2001 probably makes a claim in that, most studied Kubrick movie, but
yeah, 2001, as I said, was up there for sure. Clockwork Orange, I think, is just so masochistic that it's just not going to lend itself to the multiple viewings. Now, personally, Eyes Wide Shut is something that I've analyzed many, many times. Full Metal Jacket to me is just a very good war movie that is very complex, but I don't think, besides technically, goes very deep. Barry Lyndon, same thing. Lolita, same thing. So yeah, I think The Shining is the crux of Kubrick's career in terms of him showing every tool in the toolbox.
But there's just so many different interpretations of that movie. Like people basically trying to solve the movie. Like, why are there these continuity errors? Why are there, what are these images we see? And that's sort of the, you know, so these images we see in the background, you know, the overlook is in itself a continuity error because what you see on the outside as compared to what happens on the inside. And it's sort of the consequence of knowing that your director is a control freak and you know, is paying attention to everything in his movie. So when you see continuity errors and things like that, people are like, okay, there has to be a meaning behind this.
Right, because it's not an error. Now, it's fully possible there actually are continuity errors.
Yeah, it could be an error. But then, you know, I sent you guys that thing where the guy believes that Wendy is the one who, it's all in Wendy's head. throughout the whole thing. He made some pretty good arguments.
I've now watched that video three times.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. The thing for me is the TV that's unplugged. That's so like, why is it unplugged and still showing a cartoon? Yeah. Why is it like that?
Yeah.
And then this guy saying it's all in Wendy's head. So, you know, if the TV really is blank and Danny says I'm bored, that makes complete fucking sense.
Yeah.
And her saying, you know, well, you know, it's pretty compelling.
It is very compelling. It's five times more compelling than any of that Room 237 documentary.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's that one. I feel like the filmmakers came into that one like, we're going to get something really fun to talk about here. And then they didn't realize the crazy that they walked into.
Yeah. I mean, none of this shit is plausible, but that one that you sent us is plausible. I don't think it's right, but it's plausible. And oh my God. I'm down with that.
Well, it's, you know, if he's not following Stephen King's material, and he's not really, I mean, exactly. He's kind of is, but yeah, not, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like yeah. The template, but, it would be something Kubrick would do to be like, I think this is all in Wendy's head. I think she's making this shit up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then our last one that we have are franchises. Now this is difficult,
mm-hmm.
especially. Especially right. After Barrett and Jeremy already answered the question, I was like, I don't have anything left.
There aren't a ton of horror franchises, A. There aren't a ton of good horror franchises, B.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the Final Destination series.
Ah,
that's a this, great call. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I could pick all along the spectrum here, depending on what I want. Do I want... Like, the first one, I think, is a legitimately fun time, a legitimately good movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The second one, it starts to be a little bit of a campy imitation of itself, but not too much.
But it's third got, one, I guess it's got a bigger budget, right? Or it seems it like it's does, got a bigger well, budget.
They probably spent on that highway wreck the whole budget of the first movie.
There is no more indelible image of that entire franchise than the logging truck.
No, oh, I agree. Yeah. The third one goes into camp pretty hard. And then the fourth one, they cut all the budget. They were like, we will let you make a fourth Final Destination movie, but that's only the for Final Destination,
right?
Yes.
they add a V.
And so the disaster is at a big car race, like a Formula One race. But you can tell that they just shot one small section of bleachers, like maybe not even 20 feet wide.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's no crowd shots. There's no... When the wreck happens, it's like somebody throws a tire up into the bleachers, and there's some
Photoshop
air effects. It is the lowest budget I have ever seen. For all I know, that one may have gone straight to DVD. I don't know. Then they made the fifth one, which is the bridge collapse, which is kind of getting back in form. Not quite there. I'd put it on a par with maybe the second one, but then the end of the fifth one ties everything back to the first one.
Yeah.
And they get on a plane at the end of the fifth one, and it's the fucking plane from the first one, and you see the kids freaking out leaving the plane before it explodes. That was cool enough to make me like the fifth one more than I probably should. This series is my jam. Like, I love how... Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen all of them at least twice.
I've seen them as well. Nice. Actually, weirdly, I may have not seen part two because that came out when I, in that brief window of time that I wasn't working at a movie theater. I don't think I've gone back to watch it. And I've heard that's a great one. So
yeah. The third one is Mary Elizabeth Winstead and the roller coaster accident.
Can't forget that one. The funny thing about the sequels for me, I'm sure it's on purpose, but they always go, these people always go into a room where it is the worst OSHA standards possible. and like, it's like, you know, somebody goes to a barber shop and the fan is like basically still hanging in the ceiling by one screw, maybe, or somebody's holding it up with a fingernail or whatever, and you see it like moving, and it's like, and you're like sitting there going, oh, well, that's the way they're going to die. And it always ends up being some other bullshit.
That's that the beauty of that whole franchise is
they red herring you like crazy.
Yeah. I'm going to name Halloween here, but realize that I don't really consider Halloween to be that great of a franchise, honestly. And it's not that it doesn't have some of its, I mean, there are people who have a real affinity for the like 4 and 5, because of, what's her name that's in it.
Is 4 the Curse of Michael Myers?
Yes. No, it's the Return of Michael Myers.
Return. Okay.
I thought 4 was Halaforstic.
Yeah, Halaforstic. That's right. That's right. Daniel Harris, who plays Jamie Lloyd. So 4 and 5 have their admirers because of her. I don't think 4 and 5 are really great movies at all. The first one obviously is awesome. The second one is it's okay. The third one is campy fun. If you want to get into that and you don't give a fuck about Michael Myers and everything and whatever, that it's a campy fucking, and you can enjoy that movie on its own. Halloween 6, the one where they came out with one in the 90s, is it The Curse of Michael Myers, is not good at all. And then they came out with Halloween H2O, which was not good.
It's not. I have a special place in my heart because I was that 98?
Yes, I think it was, actually.
So I think I was working at the Hollywood 27 at that point. It just had such a late 90s cast of Busta Rhymes and Josh Hartnett and, like, I don't know.
Was he in H2O or was in, yeah, it was Halloween Resurrection that Busta Rhymes was in.
Oh, okay.
That's probably the most forgotten Halloween sequel, by the way, that came out. That's the one where they tried to do kind of a found footage thing. It wasn't the movie wasn't found footage, but they were making it where they were shooting all this different stuff with video cameras and stuff. That movie's awful. H2O was basically trying to get back to that old flavor of it where Jamie Lee Curtis is, you know, she's a mother to Josh Hartnett in that movie. Michelle Williams is his girlfriend. And Michael Myers comes back and it's just, that's not good. The Resurrection's not good. And then the zombie movies, the Rob Zombie versions of Halloween. Some people love those. They have their, you know, obviously Zombie has his audience, but I thought that was just, it was just too much redneck horror for me.
White trashiness. Do you like House of 1,000 Corpses or the what's the one after that one?
Devil's Rejects.
Do you like those?
No, I wasn't a big fan. Although I know a lot of people. I mean, first off, House of the Dead. I don't know very many people who are fans of that, but I know House of the Dead. I meant House of 1,000 Corpses. Mm-hmm. House of 1,000 Corpses. I don't know too many people who are fans of that, but those same people love Devil's Rejects. So,
yeah.
Also, to be fair, very few people like House of the Dead.
Is that the one with Paris Hilton?
That's House of Wax. House of the Dead is Uwe Boll.
Yeah. Prize fighter.
Yeah, exactly. That movie. Oh my God.
We did indeed.
Video game
was fun.
Then they do another reboot of Halloween with just a plane called Halloween. There's 3 fucking movies called Halloween.
Yeah.
And I remember there was so much hype for this new one. And I remember just watching it going, what are people seeing in this movie that makes it so good? And so it's all been a disappointment. I think that I'm naming Halloween as a good franchise here because it is so, enduring. It's got so, I mean, there's a million of them. I mean, I'm not the biggest Friday the 13th person or Nightmare on Elm Street person. So, I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street probably is a better franchise than this is, but
yeah, it's more creative, I think.
Right. But I haven't, I mean, it's Halloween. I don't know. It's probably not a perfect answer to this question, especially considering, I just couldn't think of very many others that had any kind of impact. So,
well, I have three, and I'm sure I stole some of them.
You did.
One that that kind of came out of nowhere for me, because it had I had to re-realize that it was horror. But the Hannibal Lecter trilogy.
Oh yeah,
we all agree that Silence of the Lambs is a horror movie. It's also a procedural thriller. It's a crime drama. It's, you know, a comedy.
Baby mama drama.
It's not a comedy. But, you know, it is very much a horror movie with an indelible performance by Anthony Hopkins. But also, man, Hannibal came after that. It's a good movie. I like that movie.
Ray Liotta with his brain hanging out.
Yeah. Yo, there's so much good stuff in that movie. Now, I mean, Gary Oldman as Mason Verger is horrific to look at, but he's horrific for a reason. The stuff
you gotta love
is weird, but it's weird for a reason.
You gotta love an actor who's like, yes, give me the role where no one will recognize me whatsoever, and I will be horribly disfigured. Yeah. Give me that role.
Yeah.
And that movie holds up better. The first time I watched it, I didn't like it, but it holds up better. I don't really need all the Ray Liotta stuff in the beginning. And I find Julianne Moore's
accent.
Imitation of Jodie Foster to be a little frustrating. And I think you guys know, I love Red Dragon. I think Red Dragon's great.
Sure. No, and that's, it's weird that it's the trilogy, because that's the one that came the last, but it's based on the first book. The Red Dragon. Of course, they made Manhunter with William Peterson and Brian Cox. And Brian Cox was a very good Hannibal Lecter. But yeah, Red Dragon, featuring Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter again, is really engaging. And I think Edward Norton is fantastic in this movie. I think Ralph Fiennes is definitely fantastic in this movie. Mm-hmm. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman is Freddie Lowndes, I think is his name.
That sounds right for some reason.
I think everybody is perfectly cast. Emily Watson as the blind lady that falls in love with Francis Tyler Hyde.
Brett as the from Pulp Fiction as the skeezy guy that wants to date her.
Oh shit! I forgot that. Yeah, that's right. I think all three of these makes a very, very good franchise. I know that Manhunter. Now this is De Palma too, right? Who did? Oh, was it Michael Mann?
Ridley
Michael
Scott. Mann. What Manhunter?
Manhunter.
Which one? Yeah. Manhunter was Michael Mann. Yes.
Michael Mann. Okay. Yeah. I get those confused sometimes, weirdly enough. But yeah, Michael Mann. I know Manhunter really has its fans. I understand it. But I think Red Dragon. I just prefer watching it. It seems like it's got more of a scope to it. And I think Hannibal is underrated, man. Now that's Ridley Scott doing some crazy stuff. And I remember reading the book when it came out, thinking, boy, this is some crazy stuff. But I think it's worth a watch if you haven't watched it. Mm-hmm. One of my other favorites, surprisingly, because it has, by the way, you check a Rotten Tomato score or an IMDb score, it's almost all of these movies have the exact same thing. 6 IMDb, 54 Rotten Tomatoes aggregate is The Purge. Rotten Tomatoes score, the lowest Rotten Tomatoes score aggregate, by the way, for the Purge franchise is the first Purge, not the movie called The First Purge, the initial movie, The Purge, which is weird because that's my favorite one. But I actually weirdly enjoy. I kind of expected to like the first one. It's got a great cast. It's got an interesting concept and everything. I thought they pulled it off very well. Did not expect to like The Purge Anarchy, which I did. Did definitely not expect to like The Purge Election Year. and I really like that movie.
Purge Election Year might be the best one.
It may be. It's Chickie from Lost.
Yeah, Elizabeth Mitchell.
Mitchell, another Elizabeth out there. I think it's fantastic. The first Purge I thought was better than my expectations. And then I haven't seen the Forever Purge, but I hear it's about the same kind of thing.
Yeah, we were talking. I haven't watched it yet, but looking at the cover of the Blu-ray and everything, we were talking about how it would be cool to actually go out into the rural areas with this franchise instead of it being in the city. It looks like it might be, because I think this one's in Texas.
And, I mean, that's what this property does. Is, yeah, a lot of it's in the city and everything, but it doesn't follow the same characters, sometimes mm-hmm. for a reason.
Yeah.
But it doesn't follow the same, you know, masked vigilantes or anything like that. I think Frank Grillo was maybe in 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But I think he's the only recurring character, really. But it focuses on different things. And you can see how this applies to different settings. And I dig it. I dig mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Dig it the most.
Yeah.
And my last one, and maybe I'm on an island, but I really like every Paranormal Activity movie that has come mm-hmm. out, except for mm-hmm. The Paranormal Activity Gangland or San Andreas or whatever the fuck they
There's do. One called The Masked Ones, I think, or the, what is it called?
Isn't there a junior version?
There's a junior, yeah. There's
Paranormal
a
Activity Junior.
There's also a Mrs. Paranormal Activity.
What if horror movies had junior versions of little kids?
Right? There was, there's the Marked Ones.
The Marked Ones, yeah.
There's the Ghost Dimension, which is, I think, 5?
Yeah, I think that's technically 5. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then there's like one that's either, and there's a couple of others that are just showing up on the IMDb here. One's called The Other Side, which I guess is coming out next year. And then there's another Paranormal Activity called Next of Kin, which has a 2021 release date. I'm wondering if it's straight to video or if it's supposed to come out or what.
It could be.
But, the Purge Junior.
1 through 4, I think is really, really good. Now, 3, is 3 the one with the Xbox like thing, or is that 4?
It's
3
probably,
is the reboot. 3 is the prequel, right?
They all kind of go backwards at first, because remember the second one is like, I think
the second one is 1 month before the first one.
The third one is like in the '80s.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then Paranormal Activity 4 is the one that has a Catherine Newton in it.
Right. 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 And that's the one set in modern day where they use the technology and you can see Toby running around in the fucking Xbox lights and shit like that.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's the one. That's the one with the Xbox, because I remember that scene now.
Well, that's a little silly. But listen, I dig it. I'm good with this. I like the pretense of this. I loved the first one. Mm-hmm. You know, had a great marketing campaign. Was supposedly the scariest movie in the history of movies.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
They had a great marketing campaign that showed people in the theater with the night vision and everything people all getting scared and stuff. There was this bullshit. I think it was bullshit, but it was a nice way to market the movie where they were like, let's get this many signatures and we can get this movie in theaters. By the way, movies. Produced by Paramount. They don't have any problem. They don't have any problem getting movies into theaters. But they were like, let's get all these signatures and we can get the movie in theaters. And apparently they got enough so that they could come out with their pre-planned release date
just
that they always wanted.
Yeah.
We saw this together, right, Barrett? Didn't we see this together?
The first one? No, I saw the first one with my little nephew who was scared to death at the time, and my cousin.
Okay. It's this or Catfish we watch. I can't remember.
No, we watched Catfish together for sure.
Yeah. I thought Catfish was supposed to be a fucking horror movie, and I was so goddamn disappointed.
We all walked out of that like Barton.
I was like, what the fuck?
Naked lunch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For some reason, and I would have picked this had I known, but I, for some reason, thought you guys, one of you guys wrote Scream down as your franchise. And, I probably would have picked this one, considering what had been taken and everything. I'm not a big fan of part two or part three, and not part four really either. I'm not a big fan of them. I think they are solid movies. Two and four.
Two in particular. Yeah.
Yes. Two for sure. That's where Wes Craven is like, he's like shooting that like De Palma shoots The Untouchables. He's like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 There's that. I mean, it's an engaging thing. And, you know, who plays Billy's mom? Is it Jane Lynch? Or is it
Billy's mom? Oh, it's Laurie Metcalf.
Laurie Metcalf.
That's right. No, yeah. I mean, I think the story is good, but you're right. It's the cinematography. It's the direction that really goes up a notch.
Part two is one of those where it's like, I like that one. Okay. It's not as good as the first one, I guess is more my main qualm, if you can call that a qualm. But it's got a lot of moments in it that I love, like, you know, Randy going, fuck you. Timothy Oliphant is fucking great in it.
He is terrific in that, man.
Yeah. And three is the one where they're just, it's the movie set. It's kind of movie nerdy in a way. It's wrapping it up. A lot of the times when you write this extra story to the main story, it starts getting to this point where it's like, this has gotten a little too complex for what we started with, because, you know, it starts off with, you know, Skeet Ulrich and Matthew Lillard being killers in the first one. And then it's like, oh, but wait, there's more. They were also told to do this by this guy who was also behind the scenes. And it's like there's always this guy behind the guy that, you know, that keeps showing up in the, as they build more mythology to the movie, do more world building of the movie.
Is it three that Cotton is the main suspect? Where
I was just going to say that by three, I'm so weary of Cotton Weary. Right? I just want him to go away.
What kills me about Cotton Weary in that movie is he's a fucking stalker.
He's
clear. Like Jonathan was when we, I think we sensed Scream 3, but I'm not sure if that's available anymore. He was bringing up the fact that I believe that in the original draft he is supposed to be the killer, and because it makes no sense for him to do the things he does in that movie. Yeah, if not for that,
exactly.
Unless you're just being guided by the movie to be a suspect, because he keeps on showing up in the library. Hey, Sydney, I need my 15 minutes of fame here, Sydney. And then four, I think four was a misfire. I haven't seen it in forever, but it's always weird to see a sequel. And this is why I'm a little leery of Scream 5, just called Scream. Because when you see a movie that is now 10 to 12 years removed from where it was earlier, it has a hard time blending in. There's all these people who weren't even like alive when the first movie came out, and people who were maybe 3 years old when the first movie came out, who are now, you know, recognizable stars and everything. I don't even remember much about Scream 4. I just remember I was disappointed as fuck in it.
Yeah.
All I remember is that false opening that just keeps going on forever and ever and ever.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like famous people get killed, and then it turns out somebody's watching them, and then you get killed, and it turns out somebody's... It's all like a trapdoor. 30 minutes of the movie is just lies.
Yeah. So yeah, I haven't seen that one since it came out, but yeah, I mean, maybe this new Scream, maybe they, you know, maybe it's.
I should also, for those in the audience, ashamed of me for not having mentioned it among my favorite franchises, I do still have love for Wrong Turn.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just wanted to give some airtime to another franchise that I like even more.
Does Wrong Turn have the most titties?
Wrong Turn?
I mean, the franchise.
Oh. Hard to say.
The middle ones don't really go for the nudity.
Oh, really? I thought that whole thing just kind of leaned into it.
It's more. No.
That last one that came out had an interesting premise to it. We interviewed the director of that movie, the last Wrong Turn that came out.
Wasn't that also just called Wrong Turn?
It was just called Wrong Turn, yes. Yeah, it's going to be very hard to distinguish between a movie that's the first movie and the 18th movie after a while.
Yep.
But it had a very intriguing premise to it that I think you guys might dig, actually. Because it's got a different perspective than the other Wrong Turns.
Although, take a Wrong Turn into space.
Right. And right. Ludacris and Tyrese Gibson are up there getting scared of the space ghost. And one more thing. I don't think are the three of us big fans of The Exorcist, because that is routinely put on the top of the list of many people. We haven't mentioned it. I'm okay with it. I've never been a huge fan of The Exorcist.
Look, I was out of my parents' guidance and control for just one short evening.
Mm-hmm.
And the people placed in charge of shepherding me through those 3 hours put The Exorcist on television. I was maybe 9.
Oh, no.
I have never watched that movie again. Never watched any of those movies again.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Even movies that dabble in exorcisms give me the willies. Like The Exorcism of Emily Rose, I watched.
Mm-hmm.
But gave me a few willies. But The Exorcist itself is too. There's like PTSD there, man. Mm-hmm. That scared the bejesus out of me.
I think The Exorcist is a brilliant, brilliant movie. I think every performance is fantastic. The mom, Ellen Burstyn, is fantastic. The young priest and the old priest are fantastic. You know, the background, of course, Linda Blair just absolutely.
Yeah.
Went nuts, and I think it's genuinely creepy. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant movie. As Chris and I think send in the CinemaSins video, the opening is weird. The opening really has no business being a part of that movie.
Not really.
For setting up Azazel or whatever the hell it is as the demon. I think you can trim that a little bit, but the rest of the movie I think is an absolute masterpiece.
I can see the genius of that movie. It's just that it's never like been a tremendous scare movie for me. I think I'm a victim here of way too high expectations for that movie going into the first viewing, because by the time I watched it for the first time, it had been built up as the scariest movie you will ever see in your life, and you will not be able to sleep afterwards and all that. And I remember watching it going, yeah, this is kind of silly.
Oh, that silly demon.
Silly exorcist.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. You know what she did? Your cunty daughter.
Look, he's laughing at his own quote.
He lost it.
All right. That's going to do it for this week. Keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, Discord, and SoundCloud. That's going to do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sherr. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
That's got me in the Halloween spirit.
This is Angela from Merrill. I guess Merrill Lynch. Could Mr. Scott please call me back? I don't have any business with Merrill Lynch.
How are you going to work for Merrill Lynch and just call yourself Merrill? You can't do the Lynch? Like, what if you're street?
That's like a flex, right? It's like if you work for Goldman Sachs, you say, yeah, I work for Sachs.
Do you go Sachs or Goldman?
Honestly, I would never work for that horrible company. So it's just the first one that came to mind with two names. Like Brooks Brothers.
Merrill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I work for Brooks.
I work at the Brothers.
The Brothers.
I can get you 10% off a cheap suit.
He sounds like a settler.
And
like somebody that was on the Oregon Trail.
His dad's name is John Scott.
John Scott.
It's a miracle neither my brother or I were named John.
Yeah, you'd be a third.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I don't want to be a third. I would go by J-Dog or Ron John or Pepper.
Pepper.
You know that Johnny Depp changed his name in Hollywood because he thought John Depp, which was what he was called in Kentucky, he thought John Depp sounded like a bodybuilder. So he went with Johnny.
It does. But also, when he stayed in that one hotel, he changed his name to Mr. Donkey Penis.
Is that his alias? Or was that his alias?
It's one of the ones he used, but this is back before, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean. This was back in his like indie wild days. Like, I'm pretty sure he was the guy who took all the furniture in his hotel room and attached it to the ceiling.
Oh, I don't know about
I'm pretty sure that was him. I'm going to have to do some Johnny Depp hotel Googling. But this is all like 90s. Like, you know,
I think
that kind of shit was going on now in social media days. Like if Justin Bieber checked in under the name Mr. Donkey Penis, like Twitter would like break.
That was his like Jump Street days, right? When he did that.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Now you're going to make me actually Google. I'm going to actually type the words Mr. Donkey Penis into my search engine. Well, this is not going well. I give up on my slanderous lies about Johnny Depp. I will be funny if you came through and just bleep every instance of saying his name. It's probably funny if you just keep it.
You could probably even figure out who it is, though, from the bleeping.
Yeah, seriously, trashed it. $10,000 damage to a hotel room. Well, his girlfriend.
Kate Moss.
Jay Roach.
Have I told you that my car reads my text messages to me, but does it in female stilted computer voice? So once my wife figured that out, if she knows I'm driving, she'll send me the weirdest like sexual texts. So the car lady will be like, I'll say, I got you a coffee, and she'll write back, oh yeah baby, that's what I love that stuff. And the car reads it that way, and it kills me every time.
Oh my god, I would have a fucking field day with that.
It's awesome. What the hell's going on with him? He just broke everything.
Well, I was trying to put a guitar between my legs and like masturbate it, but it was impossible to do in the fucking video.
Do you ever have an idea?
Opportunity missed.
Do you ever have an idea for like a joke that doesn't work in anything you do? Like the other day I had an idea for a montage about a guy. Like, you remember in Rules of Attraction where dude from a Europe trip gives his blow-by-blow for 3 minutes of his whole trip? A montage where somebody's talking about, like, the most rockin'est guy you've ever met, like, the most rock and roll lifestyle guy ever, and it's a montage of a dude who's playing guitar, thrashing, but in all sorts of inappropriate circumstances, like at the breakfast table, or and it culminates with him like fucking this girl from behind, but he's also
nice
on the guitar. And I have no place for that. I have no place for that joke in my entire life. I'm not writing any movies or shows. I don't have an idea greater than that to put that in. It's just sitting there.
Abel's four.
It's sitting there, useless to me.
There's a lot of things knocking around in that head of yours.
There are. There really are. I don't choose where I shop based on the owner of the brand's politics. Let's just say that. But yeah. The local Chick-fil-A has been closed for almost 2 months for upgrades, repairs, renovations. And so I haven't had Chick-fil-A in a really long time.
What could they have done in 2 months to that Chick-fil-A?
They bolstered the drive. They now have three lanes across on the drive-thru.
Oh, that's glorious. Chick-fil-A, it has absolutely thought light years ahead of anyone else in the drive-thru process.
Yes. Although
they come
force
out,
themselves
they
into
do that.
They
it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. How many sauces? I'm swiping your card here. I got people here. They've got a fucking army out there.
They could fix that shit if they just put more restaurants out. They could fix that shit.
I don't think they need to fix that shit, though. I think they've got the drive-thru. It doesn't matter if there's 6,000 cars in there.
They got three lanes in their drive-thru now, and both times I've driven by it, they're completely fucking stacked. There's 60 cars in line.
Sure. It will still take them 45 seconds to get through that drive-thru.
That is some bullshit. You're exaggerating to make a point. It's going to be 15, 20 minutes.
No. You exaggerated too far. I exaggerated too little. It's going to take them probably an average of 4.5 minutes to get through that thing.
The one that is in Nashville West has the two drive-through lanes, and if you are significantly far back in any of those lines, it takes probably 10 minutes tops to get through them.
Okay. I can accept that.
That's two long lines. I don't know about the three long lines and how they got that fuckery going.
I also don't know how they're going to figure out how to weave three lanes, because they still only have the one window. So are they like, and there's a person out there, I assume it's like a traffic cop, and he just points, okay,
you're way behind on your Chick-fil-A stuff, man, because I got a new one near me. No, I'll tell you how it happens. So unlike McDonald's, where it's a fucking free-for-all with the two cars, like somebody feels like they've got their order at the same time, and they're trying to like nudge in front of you, even though you clearly got the order
This is why the McDonald's person at the window has to ask you, are you the Big Mac with the large fries or whatever?
Exactly.
Because they don't know.
Yeah. Chick-fil-A's figured this out. So not only, okay, so you got one person, your point person, that you meet right at the kind of like, what do they call it? Checkered flag? What is the start of a...
That's during the really busy times, though. They don't have those people always.
Okay, yeah, I've gone during the busy times. So you get the first person that takes your order, checks it, makes sure you got everything, you swipe your card there, you're all good. Then you get the second person during the busy times. There's a second person that says, all right, where are you at right now? What's the name that you ordered this under? And you're like, all right, it's this. And they say, okay, you're going to follow this white car that's two lanes or three lanes over.
Yep.
And you say, all right, that's cool. Then you get up past that and you make the circle in there. And not only do they wait for you to get to the window, if somebody's order is ready for white car number one, they bring that shit out to white car number one. White car number one bounces off.
Nice.
And then they've got, you know, and so on and so forth. So they're efficient, baby.
So they give preferential treatment to the white cars? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Shockingly, Chick-fil-A probably does.
We should, you know, in case this ends up making even the outtakes, we should state that, you know, I do disagree with the politics of the man who created the brand of Chick-fil-A. I just
disagree with everything that Truett Cathy and his
I just, you know, I can't, I truly believe if that's how you make your decisions, you will have nowhere to eat and nowhere to shop and nowhere to buy gas for your car. And I refuse to be selective about it. And especially 6 months ago when the internet was literally telling me to boycott Publix and Kroger. And I'm like, the fuck? You want me to go to Walmart? I know they're evil.
Mm-hmm.
I have to shop at an evil grocer. I have to. I'm sorry. I need food. My father-in-law went pretty far in the process of trying to get his own Chick-fil-A. That's how I know that they have like regional limits. That's why they don't have two restaurants in any city like mine. And, you know, there's no like, are you a bigot? Yes or no checkbox. You know, the only checkboxes that I think is actually interesting is they force you, you have to be the managing operator. You can't buy a Chick-fil-A and then hand it off to somebody you hire to run it. You have to be the dude in there. But there's no like questionnaire about how you feel about gay rights or anything like that. I don't know the guy that runs my Chick-fil-A shares the same beliefs as this owner guy, but I know there's a bunch of decent teenagers there that probably deserve, you know, to work and get paid, and they make really good chicken. I bet you go far enough up KFC's ladder, you're gonna find somebody you don't like who donated to somebody you don't like.
I mean, that's the thing, right? The Chick-fil-A, that when all the that news came out about them, you started seeing all the stories about, well, you know, I'm gay and I work at Chick-fil-A and blah, 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 blah. And it's, you know, they don't go to work based on politics either. So it's, they make a good product, you know, it's
honestly, at the end of the day, almost every CEO of almost every company has donated to somebody you don't like. You just can't. Yep. I don't go for that kind of politics. I go for personal politics. I treat people around me as kindly as possible.
You also find out that most of these companies have donated to both parties because they're trying to get in good with everybody.
Yeah.
That was what was the whole thing with, you know, when Ice Cube got under fire for like talking or doing something. I can't remember. Did he talk to Donald Trump? I can't remember what it was he did, but he's like, I talk to everybody. I have, you know, some things that I'd like to fix in this country, and you go to the person in power and you talk to that person.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like I'm a Trumpy all of a sudden. He didn't come out and quite say that.
Yeah. Like there, some guy on CNN was ragging on Andrew Yang for going on Fox. Well, first of all, I could do a whole thing on Andrew Yang.
He went on Tucker Carlson. Dude. It's more than Fox. Yes.
Okay. Yes. But still at this point, Andrew Yang, who I would rather make jokes about, has stated, I'm starting a new party. I'm not a Democrat anymore. So, of course, he's going to go on the leaning Republican news channel to try and address. He's going to try and pull voters from both parties. He's going to be wildly unsuccessful, and I'm going to enjoy it. But it makes perfect sense for him. Maybe not Tucker Carlson, but it makes perfect sense for him to go on a Republican leaning show on Fox and try and reach that audience. Just because he went on the show? Just because he went on the show? Anyway,
I think there's plenty of other shows he could have picked other than Tucker Carlson.
I agree with that, and I didn't realize it was Tucker Carlson, but still, never mind.
This is maybe
I know what you're saying.
This is maybe the first Andrew Yang shout out on Sincast.
Listen, he went from I like what he says about universal basic income to he just wants to win. He just wants to win a race somewhere, It's super disappointing to me. And
didn't he run for mayor of New York? Governor?
He did. Mayor.
Like,
he moved to New York City. Yes.
For like 3 weeks before.
And he was trounced. And he also went around town saying some of the most ridiculous, stupid shit. He's just, it's all performative with that guy. And I'm disappointed.
Yang.
It's probably all performative with most of them, to be honest. But.
Now that's a good idea. I could run for mayor.
Fiddle fart.